Hello, and welcome to the MDS Podcast, the podcast channel of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. Today's episode is part of a hot topic series on the use of focused ultrasound in movement disorders. I have the pleasure of having with me a special guest, Dr. Robert Chen from the University of Toronto. Together, we will discuss a novel way to use ultrasound for brain disorder, which is neuromodulation. First of all, welcome, Robert. It is great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with a question to just familiarize with basic terminology of this fascinating world of brain simulation. What do we mean by neuromodulation?
Well, neuromodulation usually refers to changes in brain activity. Usually using some means, typically it's like electrical stimulation. I think many of you are familiar with deep brain stimulation, which is considered a form of neuromodulation. But we can also use other ways, for example, delivering stimulus more invasively, like electrical stimulation, magnetic stimulation, or ultrasound stimulation. Or the idea is that we want to change brain activity, excitability, but usually without causing, say, any permanent changes or permanent lesion.
I understand. So there are different ways to modulate the brain somehow. Now, talking specifically about focused ultrasound, how does it work? I mean, how does it stimulate or modulate the brain?
Yeah, so I think that many of you are already familiar with other ways of using ultrasound in like disorder, right? For example, using a thermal lesioning, the topic of another discussion, and then it's like opening the brain barrier again, topic another discussion. But what we, I think, want to talk about is using it to change brain excitability, passing without producing a permanent lesion. So exactly how this works is not completely known. There are several hypotheses. One is called cavitation, which is involving bubble formation, which is involved in using ultrasound, for example, treating prostate cancer. But we don't think this is the mechanism, probably high intensity. The other is a thermal effect, which of course the effect used produce lesioning. But again, we generally don't think this is the mechanism because it uses much higher intensity. So the most popular hypothesis is that it perturbs the membrane. But the membrane, there are enzymes that are linked to the membrane and then it releases and then acts on ion channels. So there are already several number of animal studies have shown that there are different ion channels. One, say, for example, called PASO1, some calcium channels, some are sodium channels, some potassium channels that can be activated using ultrasound. And there's also an emerging field of sonogenetics, which you can actually change genes of some of these ion channels activated by ultrasound and then to change the response to ultrasound. So it's probably, at least we think this is the most likely mechanism at this point.
Okay, so there is a direct physical effect. It's likely to have a direct physical effect on the activity of the membrane in the neurons, right?
Yes, so it will have a physical effect on the membrane and open up certain specific ion channels that are mechanosensitive.
Interesting. Now, moving on to a related topic, you mentioned other techniques such as transcranial direct current stimulation or transcranial magnetic stimulation. What is the difference of this technique with focused ultrasound, or maybe what's the advantage of using focused ultrasound as compared to these other techniques?
Right. So you mentioned like transcranial magnetism or TMS, transcranial direct current stimulation, TDCS. So these are actually currently fairly quite widely used methods, or at least for non-invasive neuromodulation. So ultrasound is another, I think, a newer method of non-invasive neuromodulation. So compared to the other two methods or the more commonly used method, ultrasound, the main advantage is that it is much more focal. So transcranial direct current is definitely not focal. Magnetism is more focal, but ultrasound is much more focal. And so, for example, TMS been measured in like a few centimeter squares, whereas ultrasound would be measured in millimeters. The other potential advantage of ultrasound is that it can stimulate much deeper structures compared to TMS or electrical stimulation. The TM electric really can only stimulate surface structure cortex. It's not possible just, for example, stimulate the basal ganglia without activating the cortex, but it is possible with focused ultrasound.
So you can really play with the location, the topography of the simulation much more with focused ultrasound as compared to what you can do with the other techniques, right?
Yes, correct. So it's much more focal, and probably the main advantage or potential advantage in movement disorder is that it can reach deeper into the brain.
Very interesting. Now, what is the current evidence of the utility of focused ultrasound neuromodulation in movement disorders?
Yeah, so currently there is not a lot of studies in movement disorders. Many studies are in, well, there's a lot of animal studies, many studies are in normal subjects. So studies have shown that, for example, you can change brain excitability, you can measure functional MRI in normal subjects. In terms of movement disorders, there is some studies suggest that you can use it for treating tremors. I think there's an open label study recently published targeting the VIM nucleus, which is the typical DPS location for treating tremor. So that should show the transient effect. There's also another group in Paris that have presented at conferences. I don't think the paper published again. They actually use the high intensity device, but just before lesioning, they use a much lower intensity and showed a reduction in tremor. And our group has been doing some studies in Parkinson's disease. We published a study using it outside of the motor cortex, which is only 10 patients, but we showed a change in brain excitability associated with it. But using non-invasive stimulation, usually one would need to use repeated sessions. It's not unlike DBS, which is implanted and stimulated continuously. So I think future studies will have to look at using repeated sessions of invasive stimulation to see it will produce a lasting effect, which is what is TMS currently approved for depression. And depression uses at least 40 sessions. I think the psychiatrist uses it for treatment, which is what is, for example, FDA approved, Health Canada, European Union approved.
Great. Now, I'm just thinking, wouldn't it be an easy way to validate the focused ultrasound to just repeat what has already been shown with TMS, for example?
That's true, correct. But I think that it is still in a very early stage compared to TMS or electrical stimulation. So we still, I think, need to understand what different parameters of ultrasound would do. For example, TMS, you can use low frequency stimulation, inhibit the area, high frequency excite the area. In ultrasound, we still have to work out the optimal parameters.
The fine-tuning part, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we have effects on the cortex might be different from the basal ganglia, for example. So I think still a lot of work needs to be done. Also, although we can target a deep brain structure, for example, the GPI, corpus pallidus, for example, it is not simple because ultrasound is deflected and absorbed by the scalp. So we have to do is do an individual MRI, sometimes even a CT scan to model the scalp and kind of modeling to make sure that we can target a specific deep brain structure.
Now, apart from what you just told me, the cortical excitability and maybe some effect on the VIM, which has already been shown by your group and others, what do you envisage for the future of this technique? How do you think it will impact both the research and our clinical practice in the future, in your opinion?
Right. I think there's still, as I mentioned, still a lot of work that needs to be done. So one, I think, is to look at how we applied in the different frequency, intensity, pattern, etc., to see what is the optimal parameter to change excitability if we want to, for example, increase area or decrease certain area. That's one. The other one is to look at different target areas, trying to target what's the traditional DBS targets, for example, the globus pallidus, the subthalamic nucleus, the thalamus. We are also targeting the cerebellum, which may be involved, for example, in tremor or reason of gait in Parkinson's disease. So I think we need to do further work to look at, you know, the optimal parameters as well as the different targets that we can potentially target and what symptoms it could potentially address. For example, you know, cerebellum may be addressing tremor or physical gait in Parkinson's disease, whereas GPI may be addressing something different. For example, motor symptoms or dyskinesia, for example. So these are still a lot of, I think, work needs to be done in this area to try to sort out all these different parameters.
Thank you. So as you were talking, I was also thinking at possible challenges of this technique. Well, you mentioned one of them is, well, you have a higher spatial resolution, but when you go to deeper parts of the brain, it's more complicated. Still, we have to have some technical improvement because before we are sure where we are stimulating exactly and in which way we are stimulating, right? But apart from that, also one other thing that is already a problem for other types of brain stimulation is the portability of the technique. Because, well, with deep brain stimulation, obviously that's implanted. But what happens with focused ultrasound? Is it something that you can do just in the clinics or like TMS, or is there any way you can do it more easily, or how complicated is it?
Yeah, so currently I think it is complicated in the sense that it's actually a little more complicated than TMS, in the sense that TMS, you can put the coil. And many studies do use neural navigation. For example, subjects can do MRI and use neural navigation protocol. So, but I think to target the deep brain area, one will have to do neural navigation and also do individual modeling. So I think that currently it is, in terms of the processing and technology, it is a little bit more complicated than TMS. Having said that, I think it's not insurmountable, because I think if it becomes more widely used, I think the pipeline you like to do this would become simpler. And so potentially it can be an outpatient procedure like TMS. So you can set up the clinic and have effective subject can come in for a few sessions, maybe over a week, and then could have like effects for like several months. For example, we see TMS. Now I don't see that as a permanent change, because as the intensity we're doing it, we're not trying to induce a lesion or some permanent change. So it probably will not be a permanent kind of neuromodulation. But as we know, for example, for TMS, we can apply for a number of sessions, say for a week, potentially could have effect for like 3 to 6 months, for example. So I think it is potentially a adjunctive treatment for like disorder, Parkinson's disease. So you could call it maybe a kind of non-invasive DBS potential.
Well, and the good part of it is that is much less invasive than other techniques. So, and is reversible, and all of this makes it a very appealing technique to study in a deeper way. Now, to end up, what are your future plans to keep studying the use of for neuromodulation in movement disorders?
Yeah, we have actually quite a lot of studies in our lab, you know, using focused ultrasound in movement disorders. So we have some study is targeting the cerebellum. We see we can improve freedom of gait and also tremor. We have a study used in patients with orthostatic tremor, which is at least thought to partly originate from the cerebellum. And other study we're pursuing is actually stimulating the typical deep brain targets, the corpus pallidus and the cephalic nucleus. We actually have some study going on with patients with implanted DBS lead attached to a device, called the Percept device, which can actually record the local field potential. So we're trying to look at targeting area, what happened to the local field potential. Can we reduce the pathological oscillation? We're trying to see if we can establish optimal parameters. Then we can use it maybe repeatedly over the long term.
And this is feasible, right? Those are compatible, like having deep brain stimulation implanted and doing focused ultrasound.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yes, it is compatible. So we actually did some safety study first. We have to like ex vivo study in the water tank to show that it's safe, heating, removal of the electrode, etc. So we do have our research ethics approval to do it, and we study a few patients. I don't have any too soon to share the results, but I think it is at least feasible in the way that we do it.
Well, and that's a great opportunity to look at the effects more directly than what you can normally do just looking at TMS metrics, for example, right?
Yes. I think that this is one of the unique opportunity, yeah. Right? In someone with implanted electrode that we can record from it, we can try to see what's happening to for example, pathological brain sickness in those conditions.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. I believe we have provided a very comprehensive overview of the current state of this very promising and exciting technique. We'll be awaiting for more interesting results from your group and others. So thank you very much for joining the MDS podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.